This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime stories. We'll begin this week with the lineup. We'll hear their November 12th, 1952 episode titled The Card Party. After that, it's Tales of the Texas Rangers and the Hatchet, their story from February 11th, 1951.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take you now behind the scenes of a police headquarters in a great American city, where under the cold, glaring lights will pass before us the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. This is the lineup.
Yeah, over there. Second row came in about 15 minutes ago. Anything happened?
Well, they made Francisco's prints on the showcase and safe. She identifies him. He can be arraigned in the morning without any trouble. How many tonight?
Well, 42.
Huh?
Yeah, and Matheson has been picking up narcotic suspects all day. You know, that thing on Temple Hill.
Oh, yeah. You getting anywhere?
Well, broke it this afternoon, I guess. A couple of his men found an acre of marijuana growing next to a celery patch down the town. Hey, how about those Dodgers today?
Yeah, those homers really paid off. I'll see you later.
Right.
Pardon me, please. Thank you. Ah, hello, Shirley.
Oh, hi. Sit down.
Well, thanks.
Tom told me to sit here. Said you'd be along pretty soon to take care of me.
Tom?
Sergeant Quine, you know.
Oh, Sergeant Quine.
Yeah. And here you are, huh?
Mm-hmm. Now, Shirley, if you see anybody in the line you recognize
tonight... Well, didn't you get it? Didn't you arrest the one I saw in the picture?
Well, we want you to identify the man you saw breaking into the store, if you can.
I picked out his picture, didn't I?
That's right. Now we want you to identify him in person. It's the way we make sure on these things.
Oh. Hey.
Hmm?
I know him, don't I?
Sergeant Carter?
Pete.
Yeah, Pete.
May I have your attention, please?
Oh, he's so businesslike.
You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Carter, Sergeant Pete Carter. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call out the number, their name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the prisoner as I call his name. At the end of each line, when I ask for questions or identifications, call out the number. If you're sure or not too sure of the suspect, have him held. The officers who took your name will assist you. They're seated among you. Please be prompt with your questions or identifications. When the prisoners
I've never
leave
seen
here,
anything like this before.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting, you know, for a girl
makes
like me.
Quite difficult mm-hmm. to bring them
you know?
Back after they leave.
Yeah.
Now, the questions I ask.
How long have you been in
prison? Really get a natural tone of voice.
13 years.
Much attention
that's
to their
a long time,
as
isn't
they
it?
Often
yeah.
All right, bring on the line. All the way to the end of the stage, boys. Over here, all the way to the end. That's right. Now turn and face the screen.
There he is.
Mm-hmm.
The tall one. That's the man I saw in the picture. Same one who broke into the store.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right, number one.
Okay, let's wait until he's questioned.
Merchandise. Up to the white line, Clarence. Where do you live?
727 KPI.
Speak right up, Clarence. It's a long way to the back of the room. Once more.
727 Patriarch Street.
What's your occupation, Clarence?
I work in a liquor store. Sell liquor. Happens? Happens Liquor. It's over on 43rd.
That where you were arrested, Clarence? Anyone arrested with you?
No. Well, I was all right.
Look straight ahead of you, Clarence. Don't look at me. Oh. You own a gun?
No.
Automobile?
No, not anymore. I had a Ford in the last month.
Okay, Clarence, step back.
I didn't get that, Sergeant.
Step back against the wall, Clarence.
Oh, I didn't understand you.
Number two, Joseph Francisco, burglary. Okay, Joe.
Okay, what?
On the line, Joe. What's your address? You hear me?
I'm trying to think. Call the Ravensport Hotel, someplace on Marshall Street.
You new in town?
That's right.
Where you from?
Fallville, Missouri.
When'd you get here?
Last week. Thursday, I guess. No, it's Friday.
Are you sure about that?
Oh, I think lying.
Sure about what?
But the store was
right. Stand up straight, Joe. Well, that's more like it. Just let your hands hang at your sides. You own a car.
That's him.
Yeah.
What kind? What color?
What happens now?
Well, at the end of the line, we'll hold him out for interrogation.
Oh. Anyone with you when you're arrested, Joe?
I was with a girl.
What's her name?
I don't know. It's just some girl I met. I'm having a beer when Big John Bull walked in. Sure could use that beer now.
Yeah. Well, step back.
Lieutenant.
Number you three, married? Robert Ainsworth.
No, I'm not.
Vagrancy.
Oh.
Step up to the circle, Robert.
I am.
Yeah?
Where do you live,
Robert?
Take a minute.
It's all right. I got plenty of time.
I'd like to have you sign this verification card.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, what'll happen now?
Oh, I'll ask Francisco for a statement.
You mean you'll ask him to confess?
Oh, much to that.
It's not for him. Suppose he don't want to confess.
I think he understands. We have him pretty cold on these burglaries he's been pulling. If he makes a statement, he'll get a quicker hearing. I might be calling you back in a few days to appear.
In court?
Well, sort of. Magistrate's court. That's when the complaint will be presented.
Oh.
Well, thanks for coming down. Really appreciate it.
I'm glad to do it. Hello, Pete.
Oh, hello. How are you?
I'm fine.
A hotshot called in.
And what's up?
Double murder.
When?
10 minutes ago. Quine's out there now.
I'll see you in the garage.
Right.
Bye.
Oh, yeah. So long.
Well, goodbye.
Goodbye, Shirley.
This way, Ben. Tap it in here.
Some party.
Yeah.
Who are they?
Well, that one's Anthony Avrilla. This one's Vincent Diacino.
You find the knife?
No, I had some men look around outside. Sorry to wait in here till the coroner's finished.
Yeah. Any witnesses?
Lots of them. Man who lives next door, Edward Papelli, says there was a poker game here tonight.
Now, who identified him?
Papelli. He's known Avrilla for years. Diacino about 2 months. This is Avrilla's room. Landlady says he rented it about a year ago.
Okay. Now, where's she?
Downstairs.
Take it here, Pete.
Yeah.
Come on.
You're right, then.
All right.
Oh, terrible thing.
Is that her?
Yeah, that's her.
Terrible.
Mrs. Kanapka, this is Lieutenant Guthrie.
Oh, the terrible thing. Such nice boys, all of them. Such nice boys. Playing cards and living and talking.
I understand Anthony Havrill has lived here for a year. Is that right, Mrs. Kanapka?
Yes. Yes, that is.
You've known him all that time?
Oh, yes. Poor Anthony.
The other victim, Vincent Iacino. You know him, too?
Friend of Anthony's, I know this. Anthony's little friend. They work together.
Where?
I do not know.
Do you know where Iacino lives?
Yes. Yes, he lives in Gorman.
Well, 10 minutes ago, you didn't remember that, Mrs. Kanapka.
Now I do.
How about the others who were here? Did you see them?
Yes. I see.
Well, did you know them?
No.
Any of them at all?
I have seen them here before, but I do not know them.
How many were there?
No. No, I do not know.
Well, did you hear anything unusual tonight?
Nothing. Not a word. Peaceful. I was sitting reading my paper.
No loud voices from up there?
Oh, no, no.
Any sounds of a struggle?
Struggle? Oh, no. Only laughing and talking. I saw them come here to poor Anthony's room. They passed by right there in the hall, you see.
Well, what, to go up the stairs?
Yes, to go up the stairs. I said to them, be gentlemen, be quietly. There are others. Mr. Lexman across the hall sick.
Mm-hmm. Well, go on, Mrs. Connaughton.
They were quiet. For boys, they were quiet. I mean, loud laugh, maybe. Maybe a word, not too nice, but gentlemen.
Mrs. Kanapka, you've seen that room up there?
Oh, sure.
Well, some furniture broken. One of the windows smashed. Bottle broken.
What?
Broken furniture and glass. Looks like there might have been quite a fight up there, Mrs. Kanapka.
Oh, yes.
Well?
Yes.
Well, did you know about the fight?
Oh, there was fighting. I heard that.
Oh.
About an hour ago, I heard them rush downstairs fast. Then all is quiet. I wait a moment, then I go up to Anthony's room to see what terrible, terrible, oh, terrible, oh.
I know this has been a lot for you, Mrs. Konopka, but I wish you'd do your best to cooperate with us.
I tell everything. Nothing to hide.
Well, did you say anything to them when they came down the stairs?
Oh, no, no.
Ben.
What is this?
A police officer, Mrs. Konopka.
Coroner's waiting for you.
Okay. Keep on here, Coroner.
Yeah, Ben.
You come back.
Yeah, yeah.
Thinks it might have been a screwdriver instead of a knife.
Huh?
Gonna post them tomorrow.
You talked to Laxman, man who lives in that one?
Yeah. He says he knew Havrilla and the Iachino. Told me a man named Charles Bender, another one named Bob Fisher were in the card game tonight. Might be a break.
Huh?
Yeah, I phoned in. R&I got a make for me. Fisher did 2 years for car theft, out last November. 5 arrests previous to that. Burglary, theft, nothing big. Bender's had 13 arrests, 2 convictions, both narcotics. 6 months county jail, 1939. 6 months county jail, 1946.
Okay, check them out. Now we need at least one more. Huh? Takes 5 men for a poker game.
Morning, Ben.
Morning. Anything new?
Francisco made a statement.
Clears up about 27 burglary jobs.
And your friend Shirley Madden called twice.
Oh, what'd she want?
You.
You can get the package together on Francisco, send over to the district attorney's office.
Right.
Pete in you?
Hey, he's in your office. Bender turned himself in this morning.
Yeah?
Yeah, walked in the 5th precinct, told the desk sergeant he thought he was wanted. They just brought him down.
Okay. Anything on the others?
Watching their houses, checking their mama sheets.
Okay.
What'll I tell Shirley if she calls again?
Say I'll see her at the trial.
Want to smoke, Ben?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
Oh, hi, Ben. This is Charlie Bender.
Oh. Hello, son.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Understand you turned yourself in.
Yes, sir. I didn't want any part of this. No part of it at all.
He was just about to tell us what happened last night.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I don't know how it started. I really don't. They've been drinking some, but nobody was drunk.
Now, who was there?
Well, Vrilla, Iachino. Then a kid named Fisher and this new kid that Tony invited.
Now, what was his name?
Tony just called him Pinky. He was already there when Fisher and me come in. Sitting there with Tony and Vince.
Mm-hmm.
I just called him Pinky and we sat down to play.
You don't know his full name?
No, no. And I had nothing to do with it. It was Pinky. He was the one.
You mean he did the killing?
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know any more about him other than that they called him Pinky?
No.
Go on.
Well, we were playing 5 card. Me and Fisher dropped out after the openers. Pinky and Vince and Tony played it out. Tony won the hand. Then Pinky got mad about it, said he'd been sandbagging. Began calling Tony names, kept kneeling him. Pinky dealt the next hand, lost that too. He blamed Vince for it. Then he started swinging him. Vince went after him. Pinky picked up a screwdriver sitting on the windowsill and went right in his chest. We all got scared. Tony tried to get his arms around Pinky, and Pinky let him have it too. As you saw where. It's about the way it happened.
Why'd you run, Charlie?
I think he looked at me and Fisher and said we better get out of there before somebody called the cops. He said we were all in it together.
Did he threaten you?
He still had the screwdriver in his hand.
Did he threaten you? Did he say he'd kill you if you didn't go with him?
He just killed 2 guys. He had the screwdriver in his hand.
Did he threaten Fisher?
No. Oh, he just said we'd all be hauled in if we didn't get out of there. Can I have a light? This thing went out.
Huh. Yeah.
Thanks. Look, don't you guys believe me?
Just trying to get all the facts.
Well, I'm telling them to you.
What happened after you left the house?
We all piled in Fisher's car, started driving. Pinky said we headed for Chicago. Fisher didn't want to, but Pinky kept talking crazy, kind of. Fisher said, okay, we do that. Pinky said he had a gun at his place. He wanted to stop, pick it up, so Fisher drove him over there.
And where was that?
Clover Street, I think. He went in, come right out. He had a gun with him.
What kind?
I don't know. Just a gun.
Then what happened?
Fisher said he wanted to get some things at his place, so he drove over there. But there was a prowl car out in front when we went by, so he just kept on going. That's That's really what started me thinking. I knew we were in for it real good. Fisher and me didn't have anything to do with it, but they already wanted us. They knew who we were. I just took a chance when we stopped for a light on Federal. I piled out a car, began running. Pinky yelled at me, but I just kept on going. I ran an alley, climbed a fence, and I hid in a filling station. It was closed for the night. I just stayed there till I thought it was safe, and then I found the nearest police station.
Hmm. The whole thing started when Vincent Iacino won a hand from Pinky.
Yeah, that's right.
Pinky went after Vincent with a screwdriver, then he got Tony.
Uh-huh.
All over that one hand?
Yeah, yeah.
How much money did Pinky lose on that hand, Charlie?
19 cents.
Both back this Sunday night, Edgar Bergen and Company and Eve Arden as our Miss Brooks. Yes, it's the Bergen and McCarthy Show with Mortimer Snerd, Ray Noble's orchestra, and guest stars. Back Sunday nights at the Stars Address, starting this weekend. Returning the same night is Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden as an English teacher ever seeking her special degree in romance. For comedy galore, enjoy Bergen and McCarthy and Our Miss Brooks on most of these same stations back this Sunday night, presented by CBS Radio.
You said it was a white house.
Yeah, yeah, it was a white house. I'm pretty sure it was a white house.
On Clover Street.
Yeah, yeah, look, I'm doing my best.
We've gone up and down three times now, Bender. 32nd to 25th. You said it was here someplace?
It is, it is. Can we try the alley here? He took us in through the alley.
Okay, Pete, back it up.
I sure want you to get a line on him. You know that, don't you? You know I want you to get him.
Yeah, sure, Ben.
Six.
Yeah, I'm getting hungry.
Yeah, me too.
Hey.
You spot him?
Oh, we turned left in the alley just like we did into this one. It made Fisher stop the car right by a big garage. Then he went into the house while we waited. Hey, look, this could be it.
All right, take a good look, Bender.
I think this is the place. It was dark, but I remember there was a high fence and he went through a gate like that one.
Okay, Pete, give it a try.
Yep. Be right back.
All right. You said you didn't have a chance to talk to Fisher?
I didn't go.
What about when you were waiting in the car for Pinky? What did you talk about then?
Well,
we were all alone. Pinky wasn't around.
We were scared more than anything else. A crazy guy just killed two people. We were scared, that's all. We just going to play a little penny ante last night, that's all.
But you could have gotten away from him then.
Yeah, yeah, we could have, but we were scared.
Uh-huh.
Look, that's the truth. Me and Fisher didn't have anything to do with the killing. It was all Pinky. That's true. Honestly,
Ben,
true.
Yeah?
A man named Harrison owns the house. He's putting on some clothes right now. 3 days ago, he rented the back room to a guy who gave his name as Lloyd Talbot. Tall, red-headed, medium build, about 27.
Well, Bender?
I never heard that name, but it sounds like him.
Harrison got a phone in there?
Yeah.
I take it here, Pete. I'll send somebody out from the crime lab.
Right, Ben.
Call in that name. We might have something.
Yeah. Sure, pretty morning, huh?
Yeah. All right, Charlie. Yeah.
No, lady,
yeah.
You want the juvenile division.
Now, just sit down on the bench.
Hold on.
Okay.
This goes 305.
Hi.
Oh, hi. Oh, I haven't got a thing on a Lloyd Talbot, Ben.
Well, Monica Fowle's still our best bet, Ben.
Asher brought up this batch a couple of minutes ago. Got some mugs for him to look at.
Mm-hmm. How many are there?
325.
Hey, look, don't I get any sleep?
After you look at these. Come on.
Murph and Crockett found a screwdriver. It was in some bushes in front of the house. Lab said the blood samples the same type as those of the Iachino and Avrilla.
Any prints?
One good thumbprint being checked now.
Now, let me know.
Okay.
Okay, Charlie, make yourself comfortable.
Yeah. Hey, do I have to look at all these?
I don't know.
What?
He might be this first boy.
No.
How about this one?
No. No. No, look, I'm hungry, I'm tired.
You want a smoke?
Yeah, thanks.
Well, how about this one?
No.
Here.
Thanks.
Okay, let's...
They found the car, Ben.
Huh?
Motorcycle officer on Federal Highway spotted it. Fisher's in it, shot to death.
Let's go.
My bike started to go haywire about there. I pulled over to the side of the road to have a look. I saw it sticking out in those trees.
Yeah.
Must have rolled it down from up there. Tracks across the shoulder of the road. All this brush broken around here.
Yeah. Now, what time did you come on, Nevers?
6 o'clock this morning, sir. Figure it must have happened before sunrise, because there are a lot of trucks on the highway early in the morning.
Uh-huh.
Pretty busy. And he needed a minute or two to get out of the car and push it over.
Yeah.
Well, dead about 4 hours, Ben.
Oh, then make it around 2 or 3 this morning, huh?
Yeah.
What?
Burrs all over the place.
Yeah. This patrolman Nevers, he spotted the car, Sergeant Klein.
Oh, Nevers. Well, Sergeant.
We wanted roped off from about there to there, over to there.
Yeah.
Soft ground around here. Might be a footprint somewhere. It'll help. Cover the shoulder of this road on both sides. He might still be around.
Lots of cafes and roadhouses up the road, sir. Motels and places he could stay.
A walking distance?
5-6 miles, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, we better cover all those, Glenn.
Right.
Where'd you call from, Nevers?
A filling station, half mile down.
How much longer the coroner going to be?
Another hour or so.
Oh,
here's Pete.
Yeah.
This came from the office, Ben. Got a make on Pinky.
Oh, Glenn to find him?
On that thumbprint, name is Lester Richard Thompson.
Hmm. What was he up for?
Auto theft in 1943, burglary conviction 1951. Small-time stuff, cheap crook. Well, what about this here?
Looks like he killed Fisher in the car, then pushed it over the side and took off.
Mm.
Lester Richard Thompson, eh?
Yeah. He's growing up.
He's still cheap.
Huh?
He's killed 3 men for nothing.
Out on Federal Highway, about 18 miles from where the car was found, called the High Hat.
Mm-hmm.
Asher covered the place with Murph and Ollinger. The waitress there, name was Vicky Walters, remembered a man who came in the restaurant about 10 or 11 this morning. She said he had mud all over his shoes, looked tired, a little scared. He had some coffee, made a phone call. Taxi came out and picked him up.
Did she see the mug on Thompson?
Yeah, she wasn't too sure it was the same man, but Asher's checking it out now. Black and tan cab company. Take a while to go through those waybills.
Yeah.
You get any sleep at all?
Yeah, not much. Too hot.
Yeah.
Pico home?
No, he went over with Asher. Oh, these came in from the lab.
Mm-hmm.
Fisher got it with a .38.
No.
Ballistics working on the slugs now.
And closed over?
Yeah. Report ought to be up pretty soon. Found 4 good prints of Thompson's in the car.
Well, he's our boy.
Yeah. I wonder what made him do it all of a sudden. Like, you suppose it's a heat, man?
When we get him, I'll ask him.
Investigation, Sergeant Klein. Yeah. Oh, what's the number? 315, right. That's Asher, cab driver, identified Thompson's mug.
Where'd he take him?
Newport Hotel, 315 Bailey. Checked in under the name of Lawrence Tyler.
He's on the second floor, room 215. Asher's covering the stairs in the back.
Okay. Want to take it here, Klein?
Right.
You alone?
Yeah. Oh, this is Mr. Compton. He's the clerk here. Lieutenant Guthrie.
Hello, Mr. Compton.
Oh, how are you? Well, I was just telling this officer here. I checked him in about, it was about 11 o'clock. He didn't have any luggage, but he did pay in advance, and so I thought...
Tell me, did he get any phone calls, or have he made any since he's been here?
Oh, no. He just went up to his room, and he's been there ever since.
You sure, Mr. Compton?
Well, he'd have to pass this desk to get out unless he went out the fire escape.
I see. You got a key, Pete?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, you won't, there won't be any ruckus.
I hope not, Mr. Compton.
Yeah. Anything I can do to help?
Just stay here. Thanks.
That's to the right, Ben.
Yeah. Quiet. No. Let's not give him any chances. Open it.
Yeah.
All right, Thompson. You're covered.
What is this? What's the idea of busting a guy's room when he's sleeping?
Police officers, get on your feet and get some clothes on. We want you downtown.
Hey,
Ben, watch him. All right, boy. Come on now. Be sensible.
Kill you. Kill all of you.
Okay, B.
Hey, you hear me out?
Tough guy.
Yeah. Cheap tough guy.
The lineup, where before you pass the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. Listen again next week when we again bring you The Lineup.
May I have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Cogger, Sergeant Pete Cogger. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off the number.
The Lineup, starring Bill Johnstone as Lieutenant Ben Guthrie with Jack Moyles as Sergeant Pete Cogger, was written by E. Jack Newman with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Featured in tonight's cast were Hi Everback, Virginia Gregg, Howard McNear, Lou Krugman, Anthony Barrett, and Larry Thor. The Lineup is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle.
CBS Radio brings you every kind of show. Pleasure for wonderful hours of fun. Turn your dial for a smile. Entertainment all the while. You'll hear the best wherever you go. Just tune to CBS Radio.
And remember, for music and songs of Tin Pan Alley, join Vaughn Monroe on Saturday night. Radio Network.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Texas. Texas Ranger, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles. And 60 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. From the files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on fact. Only names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Case for tonight, The Hatchet.
It is 8:30 a.m., Sunday, May 16th, 1941. The Halleck family of Rock Point, Texas, is preparing to leave for church.
You want any more toast, Jim?
Nope. All I want is another cup of coffee. I'll get it myself.
Why don't you sit down and eat?
Well, I would if I could get that boy to the table. Robert? Robert!
I'm coming, Ma.
You've been saying that for half an hour. Your eggs are getting cold and we'll be late for church.
All right.
And never mind that all right business. When your mother calls you, you just come a-running.
See, Wes, Pa, I gotta wash my face, Donna. I'll be right there.
Well, see the jar, you'll go without your breakfast.
Now, you come sit down, Hattie. No need of your stomach being empty.
Just coffee will do for me. Seems like the older a boy gets, the harder it is to get him out of bed in the morning.
What time did he get in last night?
After 11. Him and Sadie Lewis went to the picture show.
I told him I wanted him home at 10 o'clock nights.
Oh, Jim, it was Saturday night. He goes to school all week.
Well, school will soon be over. He'll be working with me in the store all summer. Maybe he won't feel much like staying out half the night when he's been on his feet all day. Look at the time. Robert!
I'm here, Pa. I'm here.
Well, it's about time.
Get your breakfast, but the eggs will be like rubber.
I don't want anything to eat. I'm not hungry.
Well, why didn't you say so before your ma wasted her time and the food?
You gotta eat something.
I'll have breakfast when we get back from church.
Sure, that'll be fine. You can make more work for your ma that way.
Gee, Pa, I just don't feel hungry now.
Oh, leave him alone, Jim. I'll get him something later. I just put the dishes in to soak. You two want to get out of my way, why don't you go next door and tell Mr. Driscoll we're about ready to leave.
Is he riding with us again?
Yes, he's riding with us again, so stop sulking about it. Come on. You ought to be glad to have your teacher for a neighbor. You wouldn't be at the head of your graduating class if it weren't for his helping you.
I see enough of him in school without seeing him Sunday, too.
Yeah, well, when you get away to college in the fall, you might be wishing you had somebody like him close by to give you a hand. Ring the bell.
He don't answer. Maybe he went on.
He'd have told us. And I didn't hear his car. Come on, maybe he's out in the back. Mr. Driscoll! That's funny. Run up the back steps and take a look in the kitchen window.
Oh, why don't we just go without him?
Will you do like I tell you?
Okay.
See anything?
No, he didn't. Pa! Pa!
What is it, son? What's the matter?
Look at him, lying there on the floor.
Oh.
Pa, what is it? What happened to him?
Come away, son. Don't look anymore. Come away. I gotta call the sheriff. It looks like he's been murdered.
Sheriff Alvin Jeffers took one look at the scene of the crime and put in a call for the assistance of the Texas Rangers. Ranger Jace Pearson was assigned.
Mighty bloody job, Jace. No weapon in sight.
Nope. Judging by the marks, though, it was something with two edges, one blunt and one sharp. Probably a hatchet, Sheriff.
Either that or two weapons.
It's possible, but not likely. You say the JP's been here?
Mm-hmm. Soon as we're finished, the body will be moved into the funeral home for autopsy. Establish time of death.
That'll help. Where'd your call come from?
Neighbors next door, the Hallecks. Man, wife, and son. Man and boy spotted Driscoll through the window when they come to get him for a lift to church.
I'd like to talk to him.
Sure, I told him to stick to home. We can go out back and hop the fence. Avoid that crowd out front.
Good. Yeah, front room looked like Driscoll went in big for books.
Yeah, he was an English teacher at the high school. Alec's boy, Robert, was in one of his classes, I think.
Did Driscoll live alone?
Mm-hmm. A widower. Here, step on this box and hop the fence.
Yeah, you go ahead. I can get over without it.
Okay. Well, Halleck saw us coming. There he is at the back door.
Howdy, Sheriff. Ranger. Come on in.
Thanks.
Ranger Pearson, Jim Halleck.
Howdy, howdy. Oh, my wife Hattie and my boy Robert.
Howdy.
Howdy, Ranger.
You found Driscoll's body this morning?
Me and Robert. Saw it through the window.
What time?
About 8:45. That's when we always leave for services.
Oh, Jace, I ought to call my office. Have the funeral home come for the body now.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, mind if I use your phone, Halleck?
Help yourself.
No, I'll show you where it is, Sheriff.
Oh, you better stay, Robert. Okay. You and your dad found the body. Would you mind, Mrs. Halleck?
Not at all. In here, Sheriff.
Thank you.
Either of you see Driscoll yesterday or last night?
We both saw him outside last night, a little after 6. I was coming home from the store. I sell groceries. Robert was outside waiting for me so he could take the car.
Big date, huh?
Yeah.
What was Driscoll doing?
Digging a flower border on his lawn.
You talked to him?
Just called to him after Robert took the car and drove off. Asked if he planned on riding to church with us. No sense taking two cars when neighbors are going to the same place.
I see. That all?
That's all.
You didn't hear anything during the evening or the night?
Nope. Me and Hattie turned in a little after 9.
How about you, Robert? What time did you get home? What time did you get home?
You can tell him. I know you was late. Your mother heard you come in.
A little after 11.
Where were you?
To a picture show with Sadie Lewis.
What did you see?
I don't remember the name of it. Bing Crosby's in it.
Jase, you gonna be much longer?
Oh, no, Sheriff. Why?
I spoke to my office. One of my deputies got a report. Rancher named Finney chased somebody off his place with a shotgun last night.
Doorbell, Hattie.
I'm going.
Did the deputy think the report might have anything to do with the Driscoll's murder?
Who knows? Fella Finney saw was doing something around a cattle tank, though.
Yeah, good place to get rid of a weapon. Cattle tanks have been used before.
Well, maybe we ought to go out and take a look.
Yeah.
Robert? It's Jean to see you.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi, Mr. Halleck, Sheriff.
Hello, Gene.
See, I just drove in to see if Bob wanted to go out to the shack and camp, and I saw that crowd in front of next door. Somebody killed old man Driscoll, huh?
Yeah. I can't go with you today.
Well, yeah, guess not. Are you helping the sheriff, Ranger?
We're helping each other.
Well, boy, I sure hope you catch that guy. Mr. Driscoll was the best teacher we ever had.
We'll try to square things for him, Gene. Coming, Jase?
Yeah. Thanks for your help. We may want to talk to you again later.
You're sure welcome, Ranger.
Bye. Bye, ma'am.
So long, folks. Right.
Bye. So long, Ranger.
Who's that kid, the one who just came in?
You mean Gene? No, name's Gene McCready. Pamela Roberts. They go to school together. Why?
Just wondering. Robert Halleck ever give any of you any trouble around here? Yeah, we'll take my car.
No, he's a good kid. Why?
I just got a feeling he was covering up for something, that's all.
Like what?
If I knew that, I wouldn't be wondering about it. How far to Finney's place?
Turn off to the right, about 6 miles out. Just this side of the Lewis place.
The Lewis place? Well, Robert Halleck says that he was out at a movie last night with a girl named Sadie Lewis.
Yeah, she lives out there. Mike Lewis' daughter. Only 15, but a big girl for her age. Lewis watches her like a hawk.
I'd like to stop by the Lewis place and talk to that girl.
Okay, we can go out there after we check at Finney's.
Well, right here's about where he was when I spotted him. I called, but I started to run. I threw a load of buckshot after him.
You didn't see who it was?
No, I didn't. Too far off, about 300 feet back toward the house.
What time was that, Finney?
Oh, just before 11 o'clock last night.
Wasn't that kind of late for you to be out here?
Well, I've been visiting. I was cutting across the ranch walking home.
From where?
Mike Lewis's place. We get together Saturday nights, play cards. Oh, no, not for money, just passing time.
You always carry a shotgun when you're passing time?
Well, matter of fact, I do. Bag a jackrabbit once in a while, going, coming between here and Mike's place. So Always stored a gun just in case.
I see.
I see better than you do, Jace. I've eaten out here. Mrs. Finney can do more things with a jackrabbit in a pot than most women can do with a chicken.
Okay, I was just checking. Now, about the fellow you saw.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, when he didn't answer my call, I bluffed him with a shot. Don't think I hit him, though. A little too far. Barely saw him as it was.
Which way did he take off?
Well, that way.
Highway's about a mile across country there. You chase him?
Yep, sure did. But I reckon he was a lot younger than me.
Well, what makes you say that?
Well, after 2 minutes of running, I was a puffing like an engine in a tunnel. He was pulling away with every jump.
Is there anything around here he might have been trying to steal?
No, not a thing. Unless he was trying to make off with a cow, and that'd be nothing to try on foot.
Well, Sheriff, guess we'd better chuck our boots and hop in there.
Into my cattle tank.
That's right, Finney.
But what for?
If we're lucky, the weapon that was used in the killing of the high school teacher, Driscoll. The cattle tank was big. The bottom was covered deep with a couple of inches of oozing mud and slime. And we slithered around in it for almost half an hour.
Pretty thick along the bottom, Jace.
Yeah, it sure is.
I was going to have it cleaned out next month.
Looks like we're going to have to save you the trouble and the expense. We'll have to call a pumping crew, Sheriff.
Yeah, it looks that way. Hey, give me a hand up, Penny.
All right, now, easy. Thanks.
Wait over here, Jace, and we'll boost you out.
Okay, Sheriff.
Now, we're sure going to feel silly if we have it pumped out and there's nothing here.
We'll feel sillier if we don't have it done and there is something here that turns up later. I think we ought to...
What's the matter, Jace?
Feel something. Yeah, under my foot.
Yeah, I felt it coming over this way, too. Some stones in the mud.
No, this is metal. Wait, I'll get it.
What is it, Jace?
Look for yourself, Sheriff. Just about what we're looking for. A hatchet.
You are listening to Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. We continue now with tonight's case, The Hatchet, an authentic story from the files of the Texas Rangers.
It was the murder weapon, all right. The blood had been washed away from most of it, but there was skin tissue and hair that had stuck to the blunt end, and...
Yeah, I reckon that's it, all right, Jace.
But who threw it away on my place, and why?
The killer wanted to get rid of it in a place he thought nobody'd be liable to find it. Must have thought of this spot last night.
That means he knew the place.
Well, he wouldn't cross the range on foot unless he did. You say he ran off that way?
That's right. Like Sheriff said, the highway's about a mile.
He could have left the car there he was getting back to, or he might have cut off in another direction when you lost him. You have horses here, don't you, Finney?
Why, sure, but nothing like the one you're towing in that trailer behind your car. It's really a horse, Ranger.
I think so, too. What I want is a mount for the sheriff here.
Where do you figure on riding, Jace?
Out on the range, see if we can pick up a trail. I'll unload charcoal and start ahead, and you walk back to the ranch house and get one of Finney's horses and catch up to me.
Sheriff.
Easy, boy.
Find anything?
Track's all right. Not too heavy on this ground, though. They're easy to lose.
Yeah, but this is a straight shot from the ridge. Looks like he was sure going for the road, all right.
No doubt about it. If he left a car there, we might be able to find some tire marks where he parked.
Afraid you're going to be stymied there, Jace.
Why?
County just worked the roads over. Shoulders are all fresh gravel.
Oh? What's the shortest way to the Lewis Ranch? Go back for the car or keep riding?
Yeah, we'd save a little time going back for the car, not much.
Well, charcoal's full of run. Let's give him a chance for a workout. Come on.
Get up. Get up.
The Lewis Ranch was big and well kept, but there was something dismal and brooding about it. When we got inside, I knew what it was. It was as though the place were reflecting the personality of the heavy-browed man who owned it.
So you want to see my daughter, huh?
That's right.
What about?
Just want to ask her where she was last night?
She was into the movie house with Robert Halleck.
We'd like a little more information than that, Mike. The ranger...
I know everything my daughter does. I can tell you anything you want to know.
That may be so, Mr. Lewis, but we still want to see her. That's an official request.
I'll call her. Sadie!
Yes, Pa?
Come into the house.
Yes, Pa?
Into the parlor.
Anybody who's here.
Sheriff and a ranger want to talk to you. They don't think you and Robert was at the show last night.
Nobody said that.
You don't have to say it.
Look, if you can't keep out of this, you can take your mind-reading act into another room until we're finished.
It'd be better if you didn't interfere, Mike.
Go ahead, ask. Maybe I'll be interested in the answer, too. Sadie,
don't be nervous. Just tell the truth. Were you with Robert Halleck last night?
Yes.
Where'd you go?
We went...
Where did you go?
To the movie.
Remember the name of the picture?
The new one with Bing Crosby.
You saw that with me a month ago when I took you to Sweetwater.
Oh, I saw it again. There's no other show to see in town, is there? Robbie brought you the ticket stubs, didn't he, Pa?
Brought you the ticket stubs?
That's right, Ranger. Brought me the stubs. When my daughter's supposed to be someplace, I want to make sure she's there. I'm not gambling on being fed any lies.
No, I can see that. You're not gambling that your girl might tell you the truth either, given the chance.
Reckon the law's got nothing to say about that.
I reckon not. Let me have that package, Sheriff.
Yeah, here.
What's in it?
Just something I want you to look at.
Hatchet.
Yeah. You ever see this before?
No.
How about you, Sadie? You ever see this before?
No, sir, I never.
Why are you asking us about it?
Just routine. This is the weapon used to kill Driscoll, the high school teacher. All right, Sheriff. Wrap it up again. Let's go. Sorry to have bothered you, Mr. Lewis.
Yeah.
You ready, Sheriff?
Yeah. Goodbye, Mike. Sadie.
Bye.
Bye.
Sadie, you've been lying to me. Answer me!
Looks like Sadie's in for a rough time, Jace.
And she wasn't telling the truth. He knows it.
Her story ties in with Robert Halleck's, Jace.
I know.
Oh.
It'll be dark by the time we get back to Finney's place. Movie house open tonight?
Sure. Why?
I want to talk to the manager. The theater was a small-town showplace. The manager couldn't remember seeing Robert Halleck and Sadie Lewis. He referred us to the ticket taker. The ticket taker turned out to be Robert Halleck's pal, Gene McCready.
Come on, Gene, talk up. Was Robert here for the show last night or wasn't he?
I don't know.
He's your best friend, and you were on the door last night. If he came in, you saw him.
Yeah, he was here.
Did he stay for the whole show?
No, he didn't stay for any of it.
How do you know? Did you see him leave before it was over?
Well, he didn't even go in. He just stopped by to get a couple of ticket stubs from me.
So that's it.
Why didn't you tell us that right off?
Because I promised Bob that if anybody asked, I'd say him and Sadie was here.
Well, why would anybody ask?
Bob thought Sadie's father might. He's asked me before when they were supposed to be here.
Well, I guess that's what we wanted, Jason.
Yeah, it's part of it, not all of it. Gene, I want you to forget that I asked you anything, understand?
Yes, sir.
Let's go, Sheriff.
I guess we better pick up Robert Halleck and the Lewis girl, Jace.
Not yet. All we know is they didn't see the show. That isn't enough.
Don't see why not. This wasn't just a transient thing. Driscoll didn't have no enemies, unless it was one of his pupils hated him.
We can narrow it down to one student, though. Not until we've checked on all of them. I'm going to sleep on this tonight. When school opens tomorrow, I'm going out there. Driscoll had been a popular teacher at Rock Point High. But he had an iron-bound code of ethics where honesty was concerned, and that was the key I needed. I found the answer in a batch of test papers he'd been grading. I took the papers back to the sheriff's office.
Morning, Jace.
Morning.
Find anything out the school?
Plenty. Look at these.
Mm, what are they?
English class test papers of Robert Halleck and Gene McCready.
I see.
Halleck's mark's pretty high, 94.
Yeah. Hey, only half the answers on McCready's paper have been checked. It isn't graded.
Compare them and you'll see why.
His answer to every single question is exactly the same as Halleck's, all the way down the line. Driscoll must have noticed it while he was marking.
Ooh. You think McCready was cribbing his answers from Bob Halleck's paper?
Halleck was at the head of the class. McCready was just barely hanging on. Those papers were clipped together in the drawer of Driscoll's desk with this slip of paper. A few notes scribbled on it in Driscoll's handwriting. Here, read what it says.
Yeah. An obvious case of cheating. Flunk McCready. If Halleck knew of this, advise principal neither should be permitted to graduate. Well,
the test was on Friday. Driscoll must have been grading those papers after school let out. Halleck came home, but Gene McCready was sitting out a punishment in another class for being late.
That means Driscoll might have run into Gene Friday afternoon and asked him about it.
That's what I figured.
Of course, Gene could have told Bob later.
Yeah, he could have.
Robert Halleck's the boy, all right, Jase. He lied about where he was Saturday night, and Gene was working at the theater.
Maybe yes, maybe no. You get the autopsy report yet?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Came in this morning.
What time did Driscoll die?
Between 9:30 and 10:30 Saturday night.
Then we can't eliminate Gene McCready.
Why not?
He starts taking theater tickets at 6:30, but the box office closes at 9 when the main feature goes on again. He's got nothing to do after that. His work's finished.
Well, I didn't think of that.
You better give me the hatchet, Sheriff. I'll need it.
Sure. Got it locked in the drawer here. What's your plan?
You go out to the school, get Bob Halleck, and bring him to his father's store. I'll meet you there.
Would you want Gene McCready, too?
He's not in school. He's supposed to be home sick. We can pick him up later. I don't want him and Robert together.
Ranger, you're crazy. Crazy, I tell you.
Now, calm down, Mr. Halleck. You admit the hatchet comes from your place.
No.
A minute ago, you said it did.
Well, it disappeared months ago. It was lost.
It got lost again in a cattle tank. Where's your car?
Out back, through that door.
All right, let's look it over. Your son was using this car Saturday night.
Yes. Why? What are you looking for?
Hatchet had to be carted away from Driscoll's, and there was blood on it. I'm looking for a stain.
Well, you don't see any, do you?
No. I see a spot on the front seat that's cleaner than the rest. You smell that? It's been rubbed with gasoline.
Ranger, you're wrong. You've got to be wrong. My kid wouldn't do a thing like that.
Out here, Robert. Here we are, Chase.
Paul, what's the matter? Why did they take me out of school?
Son, whatever you've done, me and your ma will stand by you. Now, tell them the truth. You were at the show Saturday. Tell them you were.
How about it, Robert? Gene said you just dropped by to pick up ticket stubs.
I wasn't at the show.
Why didn't you tell me? Why?
I couldn't. Because of Sadie's father. He'd kill her.
You better tell us what happened, boy.
Why? I picked up Sadie in the car at 6:30. We went into the movie house to leave the car with Gene and get the stubs.
You left the car with Gene?
Yes. So it'd be around the theater in case Sadie's pa came by.
Well, then what happened?
Then we arranged for Gene to meet us out at the crossroads between the Lewis place and Finney's at 11 o'clock. So I'd have the car to take Sadie home.
See, Ranger? He didn't have the car all the time.
Now, go ahead, Robert. Where did you and Sadie go?
We went for a ride with somebody who picked us up behind the theater.
What do you mean by somebody? Who?
Sadie's mother.
What? Why, Sadie Lewis's mother is dead.
No, she isn't. That's what Mr. Lewis tells everybody. They were divorced before he moved here with Sadie.
Could that be true, Sheriff?
Well, Jase, I don't know. Mike Lewis always said his wife died.
She didn't. He just hated her, that's all. And, well, if he finds out Sadie's been seeing her, he'll beat her up.
All right, Robert. I think you're telling the truth. There's something I want you to identify. This.
Why, that's our old Kinlan hatchet.
Where'd you see it last?
Well, the shack. Me and Gene built a shack up in the woods last fall. We go camping up there. I built most of it because Gene, he was working part-time after school at Finney's ranch.
That's right, Jase. Gene did work for Finney for a while.
Come on, Sheriff. We'd better go pick him up. Gene McCready wasn't at his home, and he wasn't sick. We got the location of the shack he built with Robert Halleck, got horses, and rode into the woods to look for him.
There's the shack, Jase, just through that clump of trees.
Yeah. Come on, Sharky.
Hey, the door's opening. It's Gene.
Howdy, Gene.
What are you doing up here?
Just come up to take you into town, Gene. A few things we want to ask you about.
Well, like what?
Like how you spent Saturday evening between the time you stopped taking tickets and the time you met Robert at the crossroad between the Lewis place and Finney's.
Come on, Gene. I'll boost you up behind me.
Well, can I get my jacket? It's inside.
Go ahead.
He don't look guilty, Jase. Not a bit rattled.
I know. We could be wrong, but you better give me your holster, Sheriff, if he's going to ride behind you.
Yeah, I guess you're... Look out, Jase!
Oh!
You hit, Sheriff?
No, but I hit him. He had a rifle in there. Stepped out shooting just as you leaned over.
Oh, you hit me.
Yeah. Let's see. It's a flesh wound through the side.
I didn't want to hurt him, but Mr. Driscoll wasn't going to let me graduate, the old fool.
All right, shut up. Hold still till I fix this wound.
Will he be all right, Jase?
Yeah.
I'm sorry I had to do that, shooting a kid.
Yeah, but... His being a kid doesn't make you bulletproof. And it didn't stop him from killing Driscoll. There. All right, Sheriff. Let's rig a litter and carry him in.
Gene McCready was just old enough to stand formal trial for the murder of his high school instructor. On September 20th, 1941, he was taken to the state penitentiary at Huntsville to serve out a sentence of 25 years.
And here again is the star of our show, Joel McCrae.
There's a poem that was sent to me by Captain M.T. Lone Wolf Gonzalez, who's commander of Company B of the Texas Rangers. It's not only amusing, but seems to reflect the thoughts of many a police officer. I hope you'll enjoy hearing it. It's called Not Guilty. I guess I've seen 1,000 men go in this jail and out, from tramps with month-old whiskers to rich men with a gout. Not one of them was guilty of the crimes the law accused. Seems they were all just victims of some officer's abuse. From the time the keys are rattled till they're locked up in the cell, their voices, though they differ from a whisper to a yell, the song is always just the same that everyone will sing. I don't see why they put me here. I haven't done a thing. Makes no difference what they've done or how mean the crime has been. When they're locked behind those prison bars, they're always free from sin. Though the evidence be solid and their voice with guilt may ring, they'll stand right up and tell you, I haven't done a thing. Good night, folks. See you again next week. Good night.
Next week, Joel McCrae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Joel McCrae is currently seen starring in the Universal International Technicolor production, Frenchie. Tonight's cast included Tony Barrett, Parley Bear, Mike Barrett, Sam Edwards, Joe Duvall, Tom Cook, and Gerald Moore. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcutt, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keach. Hal Gibney speaking.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC. There's music, fun, and prizes Monday through Friday on NBC to help your busy morning along. Tommy Bartlett brings you Welcome Travelers. Walter O'Keefe MCs Double or Nothing. Clever quizmaster Bud Collier asks the questions on Break the Bank. Jack Birch presents Songs and Stories. And Dave Garraway with Melody and Humor. That's Monday through Friday on NBC. Now, hear the $64 question. Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
That's Case Closed for this week. Hope you enjoyed the shows this time. I'll be back next Wednesday with two more. Between now and then, you can find more from the lineup, Tales of the Texas Rangers, past episodes of this show, and all the others at RelicRadio.com. Shoutcast stream is there as well, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows. Thanks to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed.